Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Double Shelix. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Sally. And today we are very excited to welcome to Double Shelix, Claudine Schmook.
Claudine, we are very excited to have you here on Double Shelix today because you are a founder and developer of GenderScan, which aims to support women in STEM careers by gathering data and determining best practices on how to support women.
Claudine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Sally, and thanks, Kayla, for welcoming me on board.
Why don't we start off by you sharing with us a little bit about what your role in GenderScan is and what GenderScan is?
Okay, well, it started some time ago. You see, I have worked in the science and technology since the very beginning. Early on, I was in the cabinet of the Ministry of Industry and Research. Then I had a short time in the United States, actually. I spent some time at Columbia University and worked a little bit for McKinsey in New York. There, focusing actually on new technologies and new medias, had getting the chance to actually invite Nicholas Negroponte, who was then president at MIT and who presented as the future of digital technologies. Thereafter, I worked as a senior officer for direct report, actually, of the CEO of a leading IT group in Europe. And I launched my own company about 10, 15 years ago, also being an expert at the European Commission since then. Well, so you see, as a woman, I've been since the very beginning working in the area of tech. And I noted since the very beginning that there were quite few. But it didn't strike me as being absurd until I was in front of the key figures in the European Commission, where we actually were discussing about, you know, how things would evolve in 2020s. We're there now. It's 10 years before ago, right? We were looking at the figures and we were saying, wow, so few women. How come, you know? Since I started, there hadn't been any sort of improvements. And then when we dig a little further, we realized that, in fact, there were not that many figures. In other words, we could see around us that there were not that many, but it was very difficult to build awareness from top decision makers in the public sector, in the private sector, just because we didn't have facts that really mattered. You know, you have to demonstrate that women matter as a, you know, I work a little bit, as I told you, with McKinsey, and McKinsey has launched an excellent survey called Women Matter. And actually, that's the truth. To demonstrate that we matter in these areas, we need strong figures. That's the way to measure what's going wrong. And that's also a good way to measure the impact of the actions that you're going to build thereafter. So basically, my goal in putting together GenderScan, which I started developing 10 years ago, is basically to build a series of indicators that really make the difference. Indicators that will provide you with elements to convince decision makers that there are actions to conduct, and then also figures that will enable us to provide a feedback and measure on how those actions had an impact or not and changed the situation.
Interesting. So you actually started this group. How did you start?
The idea when I launched my company at the very beginning was always to work on innovation, new technologies, and so forth. And because of, you know, this experience I had at the European Commission, I decided I would try to launch a survey at French level first and then experiment. And if it worked, then try to expand it globally. And so that's basically what I've been doing. We've been launching the survey in France and sort of experimenting how to gather data, could it be meaningful, and et cetera. We've been quite successful in the sense that we've been able to maintain the same partners for over a period of 10 years, among which some global company like Orange, the group Orange. And therefore, that has enabled me to test the validity of the model, check that it made sense. Increasingly, we've been able to use that data and present it to ministries. So right now, for the past 3 years, we've always used the data in France to build awareness among ministries of equal rights between men and women, and ministries of finance, ministries of new technologies, and to a certain extent, we contribute to suggestions in, you know, laws and etc. And I do hope that, you know, what we've been able to achieve to a certain extent in France, we can now expand globally. And that's basically our goal right now, to expand that project globally. I started doing this in 2016. And in 2016, we had about 4,000 respondents from, you know, something like 30 countries. And since then, we're doing the survey every 2 years, and the number of respondents is sort of growing by 100% each time. So last year, in 2019, we had 15,000 respondents from 130 countries. And I do hope that next year, in 2021, we'll have, you know, 30,000 respondents, probably from the same or a little bit more countries, but that's not important. What's really important is that we succeed in, you know, building a bigger critical mass in the world of respondents, men and women.
That's really exciting how much it has grown in the last few years. That's wild.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I can only imagine. What is the demographics of the people that you survey? Are you mostly focused on a certain age range or a certain stage in their career?
Yeah, well, actually, our first focus was to try to understand better what was happening for women at work. Well, there are two things that we do achieve in GenderScan. One, number one is that I realized, you know, working more and more on the subject, that in fact, you don't have a clear-cut data on this subject globally. In other words, for instance, to give you an example, if you go to certain websites, it's very difficult to see the percentage of women by type of STEM disciplines in terms of studies. You have it in some countries, so in the United States, you have very clear information. Plus, you have the National Science Foundation, which is really doing a remarkable work on this topic. So we do have all the set of data which is needed on that specific topic. But that's not the case in many countries in the world. And if you want to build comparison and interesting analysis, you do have to get, you know, that kind of knowledge. So we've built a business intelligence system by using some public data, which is, you know, there are open databases right now, which are developed by UNESCO or the International Labour Organization. So we've built a business intelligence system, which on one hand uses the data from the UNESCO and builds a following of the percentages of women by STEM disciplines over the past 10 years. It's available by country, but we have done it by region to get some element of comparison. And just by doing this, it's very interesting because before that, you know, I was like in the European or Western mind, like, you know, it's so bad, women are out of it and et cetera. And then when you open your eyes and you look at what's happening in other countries in the world, you just realize that, you know, in the Middle East and North Africa, it's totally different. I mean, women represent about 40 to 50% of graduates, in sci-tech and particularly in the ICT, where, you know, as you may know, in the US, as in Canada, as in many Western countries, women are very few in digital studies. It's absolutely opposite in the Middle East and often Africa. The same actually for Eastern European countries. There are many, many women in these studying, in these fields of studies. Why? Because it's a legacy of the communism, and, you know, so there are logical reasons to that, as there are logical reasons to what's happened in Middle East and North Africa. And also there are some exceptions which are linked to good and best practices. I have found some, for instance, examples of countries which are doing new and exciting things. For instance, in India, to stimulate and boost the participation of women in STEM studies, the Indian government has decided in January of this year to publish a decision by which they say, okay, we're going to publish a ranking of university by proportion of women in STEM disciplines. Well, I think that's interesting, right? Because it's often a fact which is not that much communicated about, right? And I think it's a very interesting thing to know. I think it's a best practice. And actually, I'm right now, to tell you the truth, I'm building that best practice to the attention of the French government, because I think it's really interesting. And I guess in the United States, it could make a lot of sense too. Okay, why don't we publish, you know, there are so many rankings of university. Why don't we publish a ranking on this subtopic of, you know, women in STEM disciplines? That's just a great idea, right? Yeah. So on one hand, we do that sort of, we operate as an aggregator of data from the UNESCO. We do the same thing with the International Labour Organization, proportion of women in STEM jobs or STEM occupations. We also add to this a little bit of intelligence. In other words, do a survey, literature survey, which is how I found out about India and what they've done in January 2020. And so that's the first block. And the second block are the results of GenderScan online survey, which has been at the very beginning focused on, you know, what I call the black box, because basically we had a lot, we could compile lots of data on women in STEM studies if you look intelligently at the data from the UNESCO. However, understanding what happens to women in STEM jobs, that's another story, right? You hear a lot of articles, but you know. So we were among the first in 2016 to produce a key figure, which was establishing the fact that 40% women who go through STEM studies quit these studies, right? In the 10 or 15 years following their graduation, right? 40%. And recently Accenture has released a figure whereby it reaches 50%. Right? So that's just to say how important it is to build knowledge, because we're so keen on attracting more women to these fields, but if we don't work hard on finding the reasons for which they're quitting, finding the reasons for which it's not working, so what's the use? It's like, I don't know, in French, we have an expression which is called the seau percé. You know, it's a bucket which has a hole at the bottom. You can put water on top, but then it leaks, right? So it was absurd. We were all focusing all over the world on how are we going to attract more young girls to this field. Well, stupid, right? If you just don't realize that the bucket in which the resource itself is pouring, it's evaporating after that. So that was an important figure. And actually, there was a very interesting survey that was conducted in the United States around the same time period. And the results of this survey have been published by MIT and Harvard, actually, in your Harvard Business Review. It's been also quoted many times. And it reaches the same conclusion, 40%, right? So we were not the only one. At the same time, we came up with the same observation. Just to say that it's really important to understand what happened. And so that's really been the focus on GenderScan so far, to address the initial question you were asking, which was basically, who are the people you're asking questions to? So we've been really focused on people which are on the job market, right? To understand what's happening to them, both men and women, because I don't believe in talking only about feminization of sci-tech. I believe in gender balance, right? I believe that, you know, it's what I'm fighting for is equal involvement of women versus men in those areas. I think that unbalancedness on one hand, on one side or the other, is not very positive. So what we're fighting really for is really gender balance.
So I think it's so interesting, the finding that you just highlighted about, you know, 40% of women after graduating, you know, aren't around 20 years later in the STEM fields. And I would love to hear any insight or hypothesis that you have from you about, like, what factors lead to that and what factors help promote women staying in STEM. Well, like, have you seen anything?
Well, first of all, what we've been doing is that to address this topic, we've been really focusing on measuring the impact of gender balance policies, right? Because we believe that gender balance policies should provide elements of solution to that issue that we're facing. And in my mind, there are three topics that need really to be addressed first, which are linked to the fact that basically it's very difficult for women to be comfortable in STEM jobs, to have a career when having a child, to have a balanced, you know, a balance between work and private life. It's more complicated for women because obviously whenever you have children, parental, you know, the parental charges are the, generally speaking, it's, you know, always women who are doing it. So as a result of which, I think that provides for an explanation of the dropout that you're seeing. Fact that they're isolated, difficulty to make yourself heard in those careers, and the problem of balanced life. Those are the reasons for which what we're looking at in gender balance preliminary is three topics. Organization of work, because I believe that, for instance, if you don't have to take, you know, part-time, so if because you have family obligations, you do have to take a part-time. I don't know how it's in the US, but in many countries, and I assume it's the same in the United States, you'll get out of the radar of the high potential, right?
Yes.
If you're in part-time, well, you know, the HR won't look at you as a high potential and someone who deserves to be promoted, right? So as soon as you have a child, if your company doesn't provide you with minimum of flexibility, wow, out, right? You're out of the high potential. So that's why I'm paying so much attention to flexibility, flex time. How are employer providing men and women? Because actually it's beneficial to both men and women. And one of the first findings of the survey was actually that men were very much, much more clever at using and accessing those flex time, remote work, you know, solutions. And there is also a process by which when you work very hard on a certain period of time, you can then take longer period of time off work, right? So men were much more clever than we were at using those things. And we were always focusing on part-time when men were, you know, using more flex time, using more remote work and those processes. So that's one of the first thing we're sort of focusing on, trying to measure the gaps, because there are no reasons when they have similar jobs, which enable those, that women use less flex time than men. That doesn't make sense. The second subject is that of remote working. Remote working is not a good solution per se if it's not managed properly. It was true before la COVID, because if it's not in the work contract, if it's not recognized as work, if it's, you know, starting at 6 a.m. and stopping at 1 a.m. because you have mails or SMSs that are arriving, it's a problem. When you have a child and so forth. So remote work, yes, but not any type of remote work, and, you know, not in any way. It has to be thought about so that it provides people with a degree of freedom. With la COVID, obviously, we're changing totally, the environment is totally changing. I think the issues that we're going to face, and that's the issues we're going to explore in the next survey, 2021, is basically what are the positive elements, but what are also the negative elements? Because there are other negative elements associated to working at home, right? You gain on one side, you don't have travel time, whatever. But on the other hand, if you don't have a room where you can isolate yourself to work, wow.
Yeah, I recently saw an article and I can put it in the show notes to share with our listeners, but the headline was something like, dads get the office, moms get the kitchen table, talking about how in two-parent households during COVID, when it comes to assigning workspaces, it's more common that the mom is in the middle of all the hustle bustle of the family, whereas the dad has the private, quiet working space.
Right. This is getting more and more visibility, and it's great because that's clearly a key issue. And I'm not even mentioning all the things which are even more critical, which is the fact that sometimes there can be violence at home. There's more burden. There is more burden on women in terms of, you know, domestic duties. And there can be that issue of violence. So basically, again, we're going to collect the data to see how it's been managed. What is the impact? We have elements which provide us with, we have partners in Latin America and in Spain and in some countries with which we've discussed about, you know, the new questionnaire. And they've mentioned the fact that actually when you work in research, when you're a woman and you work in research, when you're a woman and you work in innovation, basically your productivity has strongly diminished because of those reasons, right? You have less time because you have more domestic burden, right? Domestic duties to do. So it has had that kind of impact too, which we're going to look at. So basically the idea is that there again, we're going to explore what kind of solutions does that involve, right? What could or should employer do in such a, in such a circumstances if they want to avoid build and strength inequality between men and women in this context? You were asking, Sally, why? Why are women leaving? So I was telling you we're exploring, right? And we're exploring three topics. Number one is organization of work. As I explained to you, I explained to you the reason why. Mm-hmm. Number two is management of career. How is it happening? Sell on terms of salary and promotions, but also what are the enabling factors which are put together so that women are feeling more comfortable in these STEM jobs? Because as you know, sometimes they feel isolated. So the idea of having mentors, coach, or accessing networks, diverse or gender balanced networks, that's very important. So these are the things we're looking at. And the third item we're looking at is implementation of parental policies. How is parentality supported or not by companies? So those are the three topics. So on these elements, we're trying to build awareness so that there is a better gender balance, which is built between men and women. Do we have the explanation for the dropout of 40%? No, no, it's not perfect yet. We haven't measured the impact of the new measures which are beginning to be implemented. And we, in 2021, we will be exploring further the reasons for which that takes place.
I want to ask a question on that topic. So anytime that a colleague of mine is going to be leaving STEM, or more specifically leaving academia, I'm always interested why, like particularly women colleagues. And one of the reasons that I often hear cited is I can best describe as disillusionment with the system, which it sounds like that might relate to the isolationism that you described a little bit earlier. But I'm kind of wondering, like from the perspective of feeling like your work doesn't matter, or that the work that you're doing isn't really been given attention to, if that's something that you've looked at all with why women leave.
That's exactly one of some of the questions we'll be exploring in the next survey. How do they perceive, how they're perceived internally? Are they listened to or heard to or recognized in a certain way? And then there is another subject, which is also very important, which is the fact that the notion of meaning, of sense, of purpose is absolutely crucial. In some technical job, you're so much focused on the technical task that you do not mention the purpose, right? And it's actually, and there we inherit from stereotypes. We inherit from the culture, the way we've been raised, right? And when we've been raised by, with traditionally men looking at mechanics and us supposedly, more caring about people, care and playing the nurse or whatsoever, it builds differences. And basically, when you look at studies on motivations of young people to move into a certain areas of studies rather than other, the notion of purpose is much more important for women than for men so far. They need to know they're going to be useful, and we need to know in which way we're going to be, helpful to a certain extent. Whereas the criteria that will be referred to by men are much more diverse. So there might be also the notion of, what am I doing this for? What's the use? Am I really contributing to something which is improving the society in which I'm working? And in some in some contexts, you may say no, because some innovations are not always very good, and they lack a certain sense of ethic, right? So that might be an explanation.
That's fascinating. So you talked a little bit about that there's a big difference between what percentage of women are in tech across different countries, but I'm curious if the dropout rate is similar across countries as well.
That's something that we haven't had enough data to be able to build significantly elements. And I hope that we'll have that in 2021. That's why we are fighting so hard to increase the sample, right? Because we have the elements to measure that. So, because in the first survey I was mentioning, in which we measured that, we had a cohort of, four or 5,000 respondents. Yeah. It's not enough to build a geographic analysis. We didn't have enough respondents by continent.
So speaking of the demographic respondents to your survey, I love any insight that you have. I mean, obviously it's very easy to like specify, you know, the experience of women, but as we know, women are not a monolith, right? And I think a lot of other aspects of identity, like sexual identity or race and geography, can also play a big role in this. So do you have any other kind of demographic breakdown besides just the country where they're living, like racial data or anything like that, that can lend additional insight into like the diverse experiences of women in the workplace?
Yeah, but what's difficult is that we are forbidden by some laws in France. Actually, we are not allowed to ask about the ethnic origin of someone.
Interesting.
It's forbidden because it's forbidden by the law, and so basically we are introducing that question in 2021. But not in France. And so, you know, and because absolutely you're right, it's important to measure that too, but we haven't done it so far. But to address the other question that Kayla was pointing out, one thing that I could still mention is that, you know, I don't have the data from gender scan on Middle East and North Africa, but what I do know, based on what the data we have from ILO, is that basically the percentage of women who access to the job market in the Middle East and North Africa is very, very, very small. It's only a few percent, right? So there the dropout is just enormous. Because yes, they represent, you know, more than half of students in STEM disciplines, but then they don't have access to the job market. And that, I think, but it would have to be double checked, I think that one of the reasons for which they're so numerous in those fields is that, particularly in the ICT area, is that in ICT you can work from home without any problem. I haven't seen data which could confirm, you know, the proportion of women who have studied ICT and who work from home after that. So if we do have enough respondents next year, we're going to be able to explore that.
No, that's really fascinating. I want to ask about not just how many women are going into STEM or staying in STEM, but also what roles they're taking in their respective job. I saw on some of your data that you were seeing that there were fewer women in managerial positions, and I think we've seen this in other similar studies as well, and I'm curious if you have any insights onto why that is or if that's something you're going to look into.
Well, that's the glass ceiling, you know, and it's the glass ceiling in that it's a little tougher in STEM disciplines, but not that much tougher than it's in all sectors, right? So in all sectors, you can see that there is a glass ceiling for women, and it's difficult for them to access that managerial position. So it's a little harder, but I do not think that it's much, much harder. And actually, when you look at career management, the key issues for women in this area is more isolation, feeling isolated, and perhaps the other issues that they face is also the issue of sexism. It's, you know, you have heard of leading GAFAs where there are scandalous things which are occurring. I mean, you know, recently, I don't know if you heard about that, there was that researcher, a woman who was working on the IA. You heard of that scandal in artificial intelligence?
Yep.
And she's been fired without clear-cut explanations. And apparently she was working on eliminating biases on ethnic origins and also gender. So you can see that, you know, in a certain number of companies, it's not very easy to be a woman and to break through the glass ceiling.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in any conversation, including this one, about, you know, the role of women in the workplace or other people who are traditionally underrepresented and underestimated, I think, you know, I fall into this trap too, where you're like, oh, you know, women just don't feel comfortable, or, you know, you know, they don't move up. But I think it's always important to acknowledge that it's not that they don't feel comfortable. Like, if you're a woman and you work in STEM, like, you like science, I mean, probably, it's that, you know, you're made to feel uncomfortable, you know, and you're made to feel like there isn't a place for you. So I think it's always important, like, if a listener is listening to this and thinking like, no, I do feel comfortable, you know, like, it's not your fault if you don't feel comfortable in your environment, or if you don't feel like there's a place for you at the next level. And I think, you know, how much of that is from the outside, I think that's always important to acknowledge that, you know, like you mentioned, like, it's sexism playing a role, and it doesn't have to be like a giant scandal that makes headlines. You know, for every famous woman that makes headlines because of her discrimination experience, there's thousands of others who just have to deal with it every day. And it's tough. And I think, you know, to our listeners who are feeling, who are kind of in the weeds of these situations now, like, it's tough and you're not alone.
Yeah. And the good thing is that, well, to a certain extent, the big scandal that took place, you know, like the Me Too scandal, is sort of, we've worked on the subject of sexism for, you know, a period of time right now in the context of the survey. But it's only now, thanks to the Me Too campaign, that we can use the word of sexism without being, you know, rejected, right?
Totally.
Because when we're talking about sexism in corporation, like 3 years ago, I mean, I can assure you, it was, you know, people are saying, so what? What are you talking about? This is just normal, right? This is just normal and standard behavior. What are you just talking about? I don't want to hear it. It's not an issue, right? So now the fact that the Me Too scandal has emerged make this subject heard. And there is increasing level of awareness on that. And that, I think, is a good, positive thing, which may hopefully, you know, enable improvements.
Yeah, kind of like a, oh, there isn't sexism here, being told to you by the senior men in the male-only leadership team.
Yeah.
Well, this is getting me very excited to talk about the surveys that you're working on for 2021. So, listeners, we are partnering with GenderScan to help with this data collection. We are hoping that our listeners can be involved. So, Claudine, can you tell us about what is coming up and how our listeners can be part of this?
Well, first of all, obviously, depending on who you are, students in research, working in a STEM, whatever, you're more than welcome to participate to the survey and provide your insights on your experience. There are also verbal teams in which you can sort of express some of your feelings and so forth, and that's very valuable to build common knowledge. And as a participant to the survey, through you, and actually we can commit to the fact that you'll get an understanding of the results. What we want to do is basically that, you know, the data, we've been able to use the data in France to make things move and change the way things happen in France with public and private decision makers. I do hope that in the United States we'll gather enough data so that, you know, with you and a certain number of partners we have in the United States, we will be able to supply you with data you can use at your own level and to raise the attention at your own level with those decision makers. That's really our goal. I'm not going to do it for you in the United States because I'm not living in the United States, but I can provide you with the data that will enable you to do that. So that's basically our goal, is to gather more data, share it with you afterwards, so that after that you can use it in your own country in a meaningful way.
Yeah, that's really exciting. So listeners, we'll be partnering, we'll be advertising for this. I mean, personally, I think this is a really valuable way to help collect some of this data. And it's so needed, obviously, so that we can understand what is happening and what to do about it.
And I'm sure the listeners have seen, like, in their own research or in their own lived experience, it's hard to change something that you're not measuring and that you're not tracking. And so in measuring and tracking the experiences of women in the workplace, hopefully we can create change. And like was mentioned, you know, not just like at the national level, but also like within your own communities.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing that we're doing is that basically the data we're gathering is going to be available to our partners, for free. And we also, in the process, very interestingly, identifying best practices. So to understand, you know, I was quoting the case of India, but I have other examples of STEM studies who are very, very clever in the way they're attracting more women and making the, you know, the process of studies much more interesting and meaningful and purposeful. So basically the idea is also to gather suggestions and understanding more about best practices.
We do plan to follow up on this data set. You know, listeners, stay tuned for a few years. But this is definitely something that we're very excited about. And we want to talk about what you find in 2021.
You will, we'll do our best to try to provide you with the kind of data which can help you to make the difference.
That's awesome.
What I find absolutely fascinating is what's just happened in the United States recently, right? You have on one hand this huge scandal of that woman. I don't know if it's huge, but for us in the IT community, the scandal of this woman working in artificial intelligence fired in that way, and it's very shocking, right? It's not very positive. And on the other hand, you have this young girl which is making, you know, the cover of Time magazine, and she's 15 and 16 years old, and she's just a genius in science and technologies, and the world is open before her, and she's not, you know, afraid of anything. She's going to go for it, and she invites people to go for it. That's just fascinating to me, that in the very same country, at the very, you know, in a moment, 3 weeks time, you have such conflicting messages and, you know, opposite messages coming out. But that's exactly what we're facing. We're facing a reality which is, you know, conflicting, hard, many, many hope, but many, many obstacles. So we need to be, you know, fighting forward.
Yes. And so this would be Tinit Gebru, who was fired from Google for raising questions about their ethical artificial intelligence program. Yeah. In contrast with 15-year-old Time 2020 Kid of the Year, Geetanjali Rao, who is like a 15-year-old engineering and innovator. So it's like we have all this energy for the 15-year-old, but for like the established woman who's like a true leader, people are like, she like got fired. So
this is one of the pieces at the heart of this disillusionment I describe, and it hurts my heart.
Yes.
It's just fascinating how men can just be so oblivious of the fact that we are at the very beginning of computing.
Yes.
And Ada Lovelace, you know, Story by Heart, Grace Hopper. So that's just amazing that some men can say women are not suited for these jobs right now. That's far too emotional. That's not true. That's just simply not true. That's absolutely bullshit, right? So it doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry to be a little bit vulgar, but
this is the goal. This is absolutely true. And like, it wasn't until the 1980s that as men joined computing, it became a prestigious career and it became high paying. Exactly. Right. Before that, computers were thought of, like, women who did computing were thought of as equivalent to secretaries, which, all respect for secretaries, there's not enough in this world, but like, when men came around, it became hip and popular and high paying.
Yeah. But you know what's really funny is, if I may say so, is the fact that when you observe what's happening in many areas, women are often pioneers in many industries. And actually, we forget about it, but it's the same in the movie industry. Among the first producers and talented producers, there were women. As soon as it became a powerful industry, women were eliminated. And it's the same story over and over again. And what's also very funny, which I have observed in a certain number of IT companies, it's the fact that when the IT company faces struggles or difficult times or IT positions in global companies, you know, where there are critical changes to take to manage, sometimes the position is really highly risky. And you will find that often those are the times when you give the job to a woman and that often she succeeds, right?
Yeah.
Well, here at Double Shelix, we are very excited to see women succeed in their STEM careers. And I'm really looking forward to how GenderScan is going to be a part of that process. So thanks again, Claudine, for being here. We really appreciate it. It's been great.
Thank you so much for being here.
Good luck, huh?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.